One of the things that has happened to us over these last months or few years is it seems now that we're almost reminded every day of just how painful life can be on every level. I just remember not long ago, and it means something to us here, it doesn't mean it most places in America, but they told us that hurricane season starting June 1st. And then at June 1st, we had a hurricane in the Pacific, and then went back across the Yucatan, and then went up through southern Florida, but it wasn't a named storm then. And I thought, we're already thinking about a hurricane season, and it's June 1st, and it's a ways out there yet. But that kind of thing is always called a natural disaster. That's what we end up calling them. So you have tornadoes and hurricanes, volcanoes, earthquakes, tsunamis, fires and mudslides and droughts and dust storms and hail and snow and blizzards and all that stuff. Those are all natural disasters, which means someone's going to suffer when they occur. And then there's a physical world that we live in of people. And you think about all the suffering. You think of a culture that right now is all in this debate about what they're going to do about all these millions of babies that have been aborted and never given a chance for life. And then you talk about the idea of severe birth defects. And you start realizing so many people live their lives after a severe birth defect or handicaps, terminal diseases. People get involved in horrible accidents and come out of it very poorly. There is a whole emotional world we live in now. All-time record numbers of people depressed in America. We have neurosis and psychosis. We have mental illness. We have an all-time record rate of suicides in our country. The domestic world, the world of the family. We have abused and battered spouses and children. We have children that are abandoned by their parents, just abandoned. I read this week that once every 15 seconds, there is a domestic conflict in America where someone's physically abused. Every 15 seconds. Internationally, there's always a war. We got the Ukraine right now. There's always something going on internationally. There's genocides that have gone on in Africa and terrorism all over the world. And even here in America, we get reminded all the time. We have a new thing now that makes it difficult for us. We call mass shootings. And we're having them at an all-time record clip. I can still remember the first time I was told about what happened at Columbine and thinking, that is so odd that someone would go into a school and just start shooting kids. And of course, since then, we know better. It was Sandy Hook, what happened there, and now what's happened in the Uvalde, Texas. It's just all part of our life. It just seems unimaginable. And with all that suffering around us, one of the most unusual things for us is whenever pain and suffering comes on your front porch and rings your door, you're surprised. You're just shocked. Like, you know all this goes on, but how could this happen to me? And I run into that all the time. I just can't believe this happened to me. Well, I know why it happened. You see, the problem with the world and the problem with our nation, the problem with the culture that we live in is the same problem that's in all of our hearts. It's called sin. That's the problem. It's sin. And when sin goes unchecked, it goes deeper and deeper and becomes what we call even culturally evil. I want you to open your Bibles to Esther chapter 3. Esther chapter 3. If you were here last week, this will be helpful to you because you remember. But it almost started out like in chapters 1 and 2 that Esther was like a fairy tale. It was this incredibly wonderful story. This was about the Jews that didn't go back to Jerusalem or Judah. They were still in the Persian Empire, still in the city of Susa. One's name was Mordecai, and then he had a niece, and her name was Esther. And then through a whole set of unusual circumstances, God's providence last time, there was an opening to be queen of Persia. And there was a contest then of all the virgins from 127 different provinces. And a Jewish girl, who was pretty unassuming but apparently very beautiful, she won the contest. And so Esther becomes the queen of Persia. And it seems like, wow, this is a pretty neat story. But now what you're going to see in chapters 3 and 4 is things change. Evil takes center stage. Evil's right there. Notice how it even starts out. It's an interesting way of describing it. After these events, after these wonderful events, evil takes center stage. That's exactly what happens in all of our lives. You ever notice that? Your life's going along pretty well. And then all of a sudden, everything changes. I read a book about 30 years ago. It was called Between the Thunder and the Lightning. And it's an amazing book because a guy was a camp counselor, a Christian man, and he ran an obstacle course and dove in the mud under at the end of the course and broke his neck and almost drowned because everyone thought he was just playing around, hanging in the mud. And he is a quadriplegic. And he said, my whole life changed between the lightning and the thunder. After these things, every terrible thing that happens usually comes after some good things that happen in your life. And it says, after these things, King Xerxes, who I'll call him, that's the Greek name, promoted Haman, and he's the son of Amadatha, the Agagite. The Agagite. If you just read that on your own, you'd probably say, well, I don't even know if I can pronounce it right, but I'll try, and then you just move on. But it's the key to all this. That one word, Agagite. He's a son of Agag. What's that mean? Well, it means a lot. You see, Agag was an Amalekite king. And you have to understand the background of this to understand what's going to happen. I want you to hold your place here and go with me to Exodus chapter 17. Exodus chapter 17. Moses is writing Exodus. They're getting them out of Egypt. They're going to go into the promised land. And so in chapter 17 and verse 8, it says this. Then Amalek came and fought against Israel at Rephidim. Now, Amalekites are part of the people that were in the land that Israel was going to have to drive out. But they came and fought against the Israelites. And it's an interesting story. Moses is an old man at this time, but if Moses raised his hands, they'd win. Then Moses would get tired, and then they'd lose. So they finally figured out a way to prop his hands up with stones. And so they won. You know, it's an interesting thing, but he's an old man. You have to have some compassion for him. So down in verse 13, it says, so Joshua overwhelmed Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. And then the Lord said to Moses, write this in a book as a memorial and recite it to Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. And Moses built an altar and named it, the Lord is my banner. And he said, the Lord has sworn, the Lord will have war against Amalek from generation to generation. You got to understand, of all the ites that are in the land, and there are ites everywhere, okay, you have Jebusites and Malach, they're all there. These are the worst. These are worse than the normal Canaanites. These are the ultimate enemy of God. These are the servants of Lucifer, of Satan. And he'll explain as to what really happened. Go with me now to Deuteronomy, just a few pages to your right, 25 and verse 17. Deuteronomy 25 and verse 17. And we're picking up on the same theme. Verse 17 says, remember what Amalek did to you along the way when you came out of Egypt, how he met you along the way and attacked among you all the stragglers at your rear when you were faint and weary. He did not fear God. What he ended up doing, the Amalekites, all in order to protect it, the oldest people they had, the people with handicaps that they had, the people with infirmities that they had, they kept them all at the rear. Because if it's going to be fighting, it's going to be at the front. Amalekites went around them and killed all the old people. Killed children, killed women, killed everybody who was old. They just executed them. So God says, you need to remember that. Watch. Therefore, it shall come about when the Lord your God has given you rest from all your surrounding enemies in the land which the Lord your God gives you as an inheritance to possess. You will blot out the memories of Amalek from under heaven. You don't forget this. And that seems to be the story. God's going to get these people. Well, that happens in 1 Samuel 15. Saul the Benjamite, by the way, Mordecai's a Benjamite too, Saul's king. He does battle against the Amalekites. God tells Saul what he's just told Moses. Wipe them out. And Saul does. Oh, sort of. He wiped them out, but he was to kill everything, livestock and everything. He left Agag live, the king. Now, I'm sure there was a promise of money or something, but Agag got to live, and all the choice animals got to live because Saul could add them. And God said to Saul, I am sorry I ever made you king over Israel. You didn't do what you were supposed to do. Now, that's the background. Now go back to Esther. And if we go back to Esther, it says here that Haman is a son of Agag. So what's that mean? For 1,000 years, Haman has hated the Jews. For 1,000 years, his people. Everyone is told, the only people on earth not worth letting live are Jews. Because he's an Amalekite. You see, and notice what happens to him. He ends up that he said, Xerxes gave him authority over all the princes who were with him. He becomes number one authority under Xerxes. Because Xerxes, he needs a strong hatchet man. He needs someone who won't diddle-daddle with anybody. Because remember, in the last chapter, two of the security guards of Xerxes were going to do what? Assassinate him. He said, I need a man like Haman. Haman's ruthless. That's what I need. I'm going to make him the advisor. Now, the irony of all this, by the way, and you know this in your life, who saved Xerxes' life last week? Mordecai. Mordecai saved his life. Who gets the job? Haman. Sound like life? Life's not fair, is it? Like, wait a minute, I thought I saved his life. Nope, Haman's going to get the job. So Haman gets the job, and it says all the king's servants who were at the king's gate bowed down and paid homage to Haman. Haman must have loved this. Look at these people, they all bow before me like I'm Xerxes. He said, for so the king had commanded concerning him, Mordecai neither bowed down nor paid homage. So all these people bow before Haman, and in the crowd of bowed people, and paying homage means with their hands, in the bowed people, Mordecai's standing just like this. He doesn't bow down. Why doesn't he? He's a Jew. Now remember at the beginning of the captivity, the Babylonian captivity, Nebuchadnezzar built a giant statue of himself, and he said what? Everyone's going to bow down to my statue. And what did Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego do? We're not bowing. He said, well, I'll throw you in a furnace. I'll make it 7 times hotter. We're not bowing. So here he is after that. That's close history. Do you think every Jewish boy and girl are taught that story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Jews don't bow to earthly kings. So he's not bowing. So watch what happens then. It says then the king's servants who were at the king's gate said to Mordecai, why are you transgressing the king's command? Now it was, he said, when they had spoken daily to him that he would not listen to them. And so they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's reason would stand, for he had told them he's a Jew. So this happened day after day. Day after day, everyone bows, Mordecai stands. They keep saying, you're going to be in a lot of trouble if you do this. He's going to stand. Mordecai finally lets them know he's a Jew. They go and snitch to Haman immediately that he's a Jew. That's all Haman had to hear. Haman is a son of Agag. He hates the Jews. He has prejudice beyond. The only good Jew is a dead Jew. Notice what he does then. It says, Haman saw Mordecai neither bowed nor paid him homage, so he was filled with rage. He disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had told him who the people of Mordecai were. Therefore, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews, the people of Mordecai, he said, who were throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes. I'm going to kill all the Jews. I'll execute them all. 127 provinces in the Persian Empire. from India to Africa. Most people say, and only can guess, this is a minimum of 1 million people. I'm going to kill 1 million men, women, and children. Kill them all. I hate Jews. They deserve to die. That's an amazing thing, isn't it? I mean, we think about things that are so terrible. Just take the mass shootings in America. They're terrible, right? They make us feel terrible. But just imagine this, because one guy didn't bow, another guy's going to kill 1 million people. He's going to execute them. Just imagine that. 1 million people. Is this evil or what? You're just going to kill them. That's what he said. I'm going to do this. So notice then what happens. He says in the first month, which is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Xerxes, it says, Pur, that is the lot, was cast before Haman from day to day, month to month, until the 12th month, the month of Adar. Let me try to explain this. Pur is a little different than casting lots, but it's like that, like rolling dice in a way. But these Persians are extremely superstitious. So Ray Stedman, the late Ray Stedman, writes this. He said, what a strange procedure, but the casting of lots to determine a lucky day on which to do something is common practice among the Persians. You cast lots to get a lucky day. He said, it means that every cast made stood for a different day. A cast was made for each day of the calendar. And he said, and if the right number shows up, we might say an evil omen, he said, or some sense of significance aroused by the throwing of the dice, that turned up to be regarded as the lucky day. Thus, they went through 365 casts before they found the lucky day. And when they found it, it was in the 12th month, called the month of Adar. He said, this whole process made it possible for Haman to go to the king and say, look, if you really want to get great luck in your life, if you want a fortune to smile on you, there's only one thing you got to do. You got to get rid of these people on this day. Now, what's interesting about this, when is this day going to be? One calendar year later from this event. It comes out like almost on the last day. That's the lucky day. So here's where we pick it up. Haman said to King Xerxes, there is a certain people scattered and dispersed among the peoples of all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from those of all other people. They do not observe the king's laws, so it is not in the king's interest to let them remain. Is that the whole story? I mean, any king, there's a group of people. He didn't say a group. They don't live by the king's laws, and they won't. I don't think they should remain. Well, wait a minute. Notice who's not mentioned. Mordecai, right? Why? Mordecai saved Xerxes' life. I don't think Xerxes wants to execute Mordecai. He saved his life. And so consequently, he tells him this story. Then he says, to make the pot a little sweeter, if it is pleasing to the king, let it be decreed, he says, that they be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into your hands, the hands of those who carry out the king's business and put in the king's treasuries. 475 tons of silver. 475 tons. Somewhere between $20 and $40 million. I'll pay for it. What? Yeah. Well, how's he going to pay for it? Well, I'm going to plunder the Jews in 127 provinces. I'm going to take everything they had. And I'll pay for this. The king took his signet ring from his hand, gave it to Haman and the Agite, and it said, in the enemy of the Jews. And the king said, the silver is yours, and the people also. Do with them as you please. Well, that's just it. He told Xerxes what Xerxes wanted to hear. No group of people should be able to live outside of your laws. He said, I'll take care of it for you, and I'm willing to pay for it all myself. He said, you don't have to pay for it. He gives him his signet ring. What's that mean? The king's authority. You write something down, you put it in the scroll, you melt wax on it, you put a stamp on it. The only way you can break that, if you break that seal, if you're not authorized, you're executed. So now it's law, because he told Xerxes just what Xerxes wanted to hear. Xerxes doesn't know anything about Jews, Mordecai, nothing. Well, it says, then the king's scribes were summoned on the 13th day of the first month. It was written, just as Haman commanded, to the king's satraps, the governors, who were in each province, and the provinces, and the princes of each people. Each province according to its script. Each people according to its language. being written in the name of King Xerxes and sealed by the king's signet ring. Letters were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces to destroy and kill and annihilate all the Jews. From India to Africa. It says, both young and old, women and children, in one day, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to seize their possessions as plunder. A copy of the edict has been issued to, as law in every province and was published to all the people so that they should be ready for this day. And then the couriers went out and impelled the king's command. It says, while the decree was issued at the citadel of Susa, and while the king and Haman sat down to drink, the city of Susa was confused. This is scary for people. He killed a whole group of people. He's going to. He's going to kill them a year later. And he likes this idea of killing them a year later. Because just imagine if you were told you're going to all be executed a year from now. You'd be thinking about this for 365 days. You'd be thinking about it all the time. They're going to execute all of us. Yeah, 1 year from now. Now, this is evil taking center stage. This is about as bad as it can get. So let's see how Mordecai reacts to this. Mordecai, it says, when Mordecai learned all that had been done, he tore his clothes, he put on sackcloth and ashes, and he went out in the midst of the city, and he wailed loudly and bitterly. Mordecai now realizes that his standing for God is going to cost the lives of a million Jews, all of them. So he's got sackcloth and ashes on. He's screaming and crying, beating his chest, typical of the idea of mourning. He went as far as the king's gate, for no one was allowed to enter the king's gate in sackcloth. In each and every province where the command and decree and the king came, there was great mourning among the Jews with fasting, weeping, and wailing, and many lay on sackcloth and ashes. Wow. What a terrible, terrible thing. What did Mordecai do, though? He simply obeyed God. He stood there. He didn't bow. Better question, what would you do? I mean, it's just bowing. Is that how you think? I don't want to cause any trouble. See, what would you do? Would you stand for God in the midst of evil? Would you take a stand? Because I can tell you this right now. If this doesn't happen in the next few months, certainly in the next few years in America, you and I are going to be asked to take a stand. It's coming. You can pretend it's not. You can mesh it. It's coming. You see it more and more and more and more. See, do I blend in or do I take a stand? That's it. And it's amazing how easy it is to blend in. I just saw over the internet a local church introducing its staff. Two staff members, was introducing them there. And it was a typical thing. They just said where the pastor and where they were educated, some stuff like that. But after their names in parentheses, this is a Protestant church, the pastor wants to be referred as he or him. And she wants to be referred to as her or she. What? That's culture. See, that's culture. The whole idea is what pronoun do you want to refer to? If you want to read about it, read about the they people. That's a whole different thing. They are the they people. You refer to them as they. That's a different story. But the whole point of it is, see, you have that choice to make. You're going to have to, are you going to stand or not? And I think the most important thing, Mordecai had made his mind up. He would never bow before an earthly king a long time before this happened. Ever since he heard the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You have to make your mind up now if you're going to stand for God then. I love what Max Lucado writes. Max Lucado writes this. There is a reason that an airline attendant points out the emergency exits before the plane leaves the ground. We don't think very clearly after it's in free fall. You see, that's the whole point. That's why you have to look up where are the exits, because if I have to get out, I'm going to try. So evil has its day. Mordecai then reacts, and his reaction is interesting. He reacts with sackcloth and ashes. Look what I've done. And all the people for a year are mourning and praying and fasting, all the Jews. Now, verse 4, Esther finds out. Then Esther's maidens and her eunuchs came and told her, and the queen writhed in great anguish. And she sent garments to clothe Mordecai, that he might remove the sackcloth from him. He did not accept them. Esther didn't know any of this. By the way, she's queen. You know what that means in Persia? You don't know anything about anything. She lives in a harem. That's where she lives. It's a beautiful place for her, and she has eunuchs all around her, but the outside never gets to her. She's sequestered in this sense. Now she finds out from someone who'd been outside and come back in, and she learns about this. She said, well, I'm going to give him some better clothes to wear. Pretty shallow. So Esther summons Hathach from the king's eunuchs, whom the king had appointed to attend her, and offered him to go to Mordecai to learn what this was and why it was. So Hathach went out to Mordecai in the city square in the front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and the exact amount of money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasuries in the destruction of the Jews. Mordecai now knows the whole story. One of the reasons, Mordecai has friends inside the palace. These are people loyal to the king and know Mordecai saved his life. So she now knows what's really going on. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict that had been issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might, he said, show Esther and inform her, and to order her to go into the king and implore his favor and to plead for her people. Uh-oh. Hear what her uncle said to her? You're the queen. You need to go into the king and plead for your people. First of all, you're going to have to tell the king they're your people. You have to let the king know you're Jewish, and you have to plead for him. Esther would have hated this. This doesn't make any sense to Esther. She's not queen of Persia. What? See, you'll find out here as it goes on in just a moment here. Notice verse 9, Hathach came back, related Mordecai's words to Esther. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and ordered him to reply to Mordecai. All the king's servant and the people of the king's provinces know that for any man or woman who comes into to the king, to the inner court, who is not summoned, he has but one lawyer put to death. No one sees the king. The only way you ever see Xerxes is you're invited by Xerxes to come. Anyone who ever did that dies. It's capital punishment. There's no option here. So, Mordecai, what are you asking me to do? Go and die. That's what you're asking. That I go in and I die. See, on the surface, this sounds like, that makes some sense. That's like a death sentence for this lady. But watch. He said, she also goes on and says, unless the king holds out a golden scepter so that he may live, and I have not been summoned to come before the king for 30 days. He hasn't even summoned me to come in a month. Now, you want me to go and just say, here I am. So Mordecai hears it. Then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, do not imagine that you in the king's palace can escape any more than all the Jews. I love that answer. You're going to die anyway. He kills all the Jews, he's going to kill you too. Because he's already issued the order. He's already put a signet ring on it. You're going to die. So whether you do anything or not, you're still going to die if you do nothing. But watch what he says next then. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this? This is amazing faith. You hear what he's saying? If you don't do this, Esther, God will use someone else. That's just the way it's going to be. God will use someone else. Why? He's God. You see, his whole point is this. Has God promised the nation Israel that they will exist until they have a Messiah come and be their king? Absolutely. So whether it's you or someone else, God's going to do it because he's God. But he said, but maybe that's why you're queen. You're that person. You see, you're that single person who can pull this thing off, perhaps. That's an amazing statement But it tells us something. Our culture is becoming more evil all the time. You see it, it's going to happen, it's going to get worse. It's just the way it is. But maybe, just maybe, that's why you're here. Do you ever think of that? Why are you alive right now? Why are you a believer in America right now? Maybe you're God's appointed. You see, maybe that's why you're here. You're here to do something for God right now. Well, they don't like it out there. Of course not. But didn't Jesus tell us we're salt and light? When is light the brightest? When the culture is the darkest. I mean, that's the whole point. He says, so maybe that's why you're here. That's your appointed time. You've got to understand this, Esther. This might be what God's going to use to deliver his people. And of course, knowing the rest of the story, we know that's the case, and it becomes very compelling. But you see what happens to us. We spend all of our time condemning the culture. Do you see how terrible it is out there? Do you see what's going on out there? Yes. And I can tell you this, if you study sociologically our culture since the mid-70s, it's just steadily going down. And somehow we think, no, we'll just pick it up. I know what, if we vote well, it'll all come back. Not coming back. It's not coming back. It's going to be continuing decline. When it continues to be in decline and it's evil, you see, can it affect us? Of course it can. It can have an enormous effect on us. I mean, that's what Jesus told us. Jesus said, oh, by the way, the world's going to hate you because it first hates me. He said, you're going to have to do that. He said, you're going to have to resist. He said, to overcome the world. You see, it's part of being who we are. There is always an enemy of God's children afoot in the world. You see it over and over and over again. Sometimes you have to stand up. I mean, we think not in America, not us. Yeah. I mean, and by the way, how far can it go? Do you remember years ago, those Christian Egyptians who on TV had Muslim terrorists slit their throats? Every one of them affirmed the Lord. I'm standing right here. Do you realize one of the men with them, they said, at that time was not a Christian. He saw what happened to the others, and he professed Christ right then. Look what these people believe. You see, and it's interesting when you see how this thing lays itself out. So what ends up happening here is after that, they related the words. Mordecai told her, and then it says, then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, do not imagine that you're going to escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will come from somebody else. And he said, at your father's house. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this. Esther then responds. She says to Mordecai, go assemble all the Jews who are found in Susa and fast for me. And do not eat or drink for 3 days, night and day. I and my handmaids will also start to fast in the same way. And thus I will go to the king. Now watch. Which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. Wow. Do you ever think you'd make a statement like that about your own faith? See, that's an interesting question. Because in the presence of evil, we've been sort of insulated from all this. But God's children have always been this way. They've always been persecuted. It's still that way in many areas. I've read several books on Muslims coming to Jesus Christ, mostly in Iran. Almost every one of these people, men and women who convert to Christ, and there have been tons of them in the last 10 years, all say, I expect to be alive somewhere between 6 months and 2 years, and then they'll kill me. That's going to be my life, and I'm happy to do it. Would you be that way? Would you stand for God that way? If I perish, I perish? See, I'm not so sure we would. You see, we spend a lot of time condemning the evil, but eventually we're going to experience the evil. It's just the way this works, and that's exactly what was happening to them. I find it such an interesting thing. She said, if I perish, I perish. Think of the suffering of Job. He suffered in ways we can't imagine. Lost all your children, lost your health, lost all your wealth, lost all your service. I mean, just unbelievable. And Job's statement through it all, in the beginning, he said this, even if he slays me, I'll trust him. Would you do that? All your children are dead? All your wealth? All your self-esteem's gone? By the way, your wife's not too happy with you either? Would you say that? Even if he slays me, I'm going to trust him. See, that's what faith does. It stands up in the face of suffering or pain or evil. And that's what happens exactly. So Esther says, I'm going to do this. So Mordecai went away and did as Esther had commanded him. It's an innocuous couple chapters, but a very important two. Evil is now taking center stage. It's taking center stage in our country. It's always been in the world. It always will be until the end. Now, what can we do? We can retreat or blend in. I'll not stand. Hey, look, I'll bow down just a little bit, and that way I'll be fine. You see, you know what God said. Are you going to take a stand for him? That's what Mordecai did. We can let our hearts grow hard, faith-wise, rationalize it. We can let our faith grow cold. But God, as Mordecai said it, God's going to prevail. He's going to prevail. Is the world going to get worse and worse? Yes. How do I know? I read the end of the book. Okay? It gets worse and worse. Is he going to prevail? Yes. That's why I said over all these years, the worst thing that could happen to you can't happen to you. Why? God said so. I read the end of the book. We win. The question is, in this process, will I stand on my faith? You see, will I do that? In the presence of evil, you're going to be forced to. All of us will eventually have moments whether you either stand or you just blend right in. You see, you can either stand as a Hebrew or become a Persian, and I'll just be part of them because it makes good sense. He's going to do it, by the way, with you or without you. It's an amazing statement, isn't it? Because he's God. Many, many years ago here at a missions conference, a man was named Paul Van Gorder, and we had a missions conference. And Paul Van Gorder, you know, normally when you bring in a big-time speaker about missions, what you want to do is rally the people of how important it is that they support missions and missionaries. And so you really want to get them moved, and you want to put guilt on them if you can. You want to tell them, look, if you don't really do it, if you don't do this, you see, if you don't do this, it's not going to get done. And all those people, they're going to go to hell. Now, do you want to help us? You see, it's just, Paul Van Gorder said this to us. God is going to evangelize this world with this church or without it. Isn't that interesting? Whether you get involved or not, he's still going to evangelize the world. But wouldn't it be better to be with God? You see, that's exactly what Mordecai said. God's going to deliver Israel. I don't have any doubt about that, but you're put in this place right now, and you might be the agency God wants to use. And that's the message that Esther believed. So, two things. Are you willing to stand like Mordecai? And are you willing to pay the price that Esther was? Are you willing? See, if I perish, I perish. But I'm going to stand and I'm going to say it. Most often for us throughout our whole history, our faith's never been tested like that. I'm not a prophet nor the son of one, but I can tell you this. Someday in the future in America, you're going to find out whether you're going to stand or you're going to speak for God. Because you're his children. And the culture is evil. We need to stop complaining about the evil around us. We need to start acting as light and salt for God's glory. Let's pray. Father, it's interesting that when we see so much going on around us, we even talk about the sinfulness of man and the darkness of his heart, and we complain about it. But your word's pretty clear. All of us have sinned. There's none righteous. That's what Paul wrote. The wages of sin is death. The problem with the world was the same thing as the problem with us. Sinners separated from a holy God. Thank you, Father, that Jesus Christ came and paid the price for our sin, and that by our faith being put in him, we have been born again into the family of God. We are declared righteous, not because of what we had done, but because what he had done. And as children of God now, Father, you have asked us to be witnesses for Jesus Christ. And so instead of complaining about the sinfulness around us, let us live our lives in the light and let us offer our words the gospel that everybody in the world desperately needs. Father, thank you for the example of Mordecai and Esther. Thank you for their courage and their faith. In Jesus' name, amen.